Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Will casinos come to North Jersey? New Jersey Senate President, Steve Sweeney, sometimes seen as a staunch defender of Atlantic City's casino monopoly, says he has held talks about North Jersey casino licenses. We'll talk to him about that, the contentious issues of public sector pensions and vetoed tax hikes in the New Jersey budget that Governor Christie just signed. We'll see if he thinks Bridgegate has any life left in it, see how things are going in the second summer post-Sandy at the Jersey Shore, and more now. State Senator, Senate President Steve Sweeney, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
And I know the budget just got completed, but let me start with casinos, because NorthJersey.com, The Record, said you made this revelation to The Record's editorial board about supporting, I guess it would be in the Meadowlands, casino gambling. Did they get that right?
I didn't say the Meadowlands. I said somewhere in the north where the market would – wherever the market would be suitable for it. And I think the market should determine where – if there is a casino in the north. But more importantly than anything, Brian, is I haven't walked away from Atlantic City at all. As we have these discussions, we want to make sure that whatever is done in the north, it helps Atlantic City, because we've lost 6,000 jobs recently and probably going to lose a few more. But we're still going to have a casino market about $2.6 billion. But we have to recognize competition from all over that we're dealing with right now.
And remind everybody, what's your district?
Well, I border the Atlantic City district. I'm right outside of Philadelphia, but I border Atlantic City.
How would it help Atlantic City as opposed to hurt Atlantic City to have that competition? I mean, I see the buses line up in my neighborhood and, you know, take the people down to Atlantic City. If they could just go across the George Washington Bridge, they would stop there, right?
Well, listen, I saw recently where they said there was a study about 12% of the people would, you know, go to New York, which would help, which would hurt Atlantic City also. So, Brian, it's actually looking at trying to develop a structure, tax structure, when we do one, that delivers enough money to Atlantic City to recreate itself and become that destination. You know, the one thing we do have, we have a beach, and we've put all of our eggs in one basket, which is gambling, and we need to be more diversified.
By the way, the U.S. Supreme Court, as I'm sure you know, recently refused to consider New Jersey's idea to allow betting on the NFL. I think Governor Christie was backing that. Are you for that?
We supported the administration's lawsuit. In fact, we were partners in that lawsuit. And Senator Lesniak actually proposed a bill that we passed in both houses that will allow sports betting in New Jersey. And we're hoping that the governor supports it.
So, listeners, as we move on to some budgetary items as well, and Bridgegate and Sandy effects at the shore here in 2014, you can call on this as well. Do you want casinos in North Jersey as well as Atlantic City? And how about that Supreme Court ruling? Should they allow casino gambling? I mean, forgive me, sports gambling, like on the NFL in New Jersey or in general? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or anything else for the New Jersey State Senate President, Steve Sweeney. And on to the budget. Am I correct that you passed tax hikes in the legislature's version of the budget, but the governor vetoed them, correct?
Correct.
What were the tax hikes that you wanted?
Well, it was a millionaire's tax, for a purely millionaire's tax, for every dollar over a million. We increased the rate back to what it was under John Corzine, and we put a corporate business tax that was actually a 1.5% increase for a year, so that we created a budget that met all of our obligations, Brian. And there was a couple other ones. But the goal was, you know, we wanted to prove to the courts that we could present a balanced budget that meets all of our obligations. You know, when we did benefit reform in 2011, and the governor touted that as something that he ran around the country on, the one thing that I wanted out of that reform was a commitment for making that pension payment. And the employees are paying more for pension. They're paying more for health care now. So, you know, I mean, I've had a battle with these people, but they are paying more. The one commitment I got has been broken, which is the health, which is the pension payment.
And let's talk about that. And for people who don't know some of these numbers, The budget for the new fiscal year, which just began in New Jersey July 1st, includes $681 million toward the pension obligations for state employees, rather than, so that's about $750 million, rather than the $2.25 billion that the governor promised in 2011, and again in his initial budget proposal just this February. So what happened between February and July that the governor took so much money out of the pension system compared to what he first promised?
Brian, he decided he just didn't want to make that commitment any further. We had done it for 2 years. We were ramping up. The reality is 25 years from now, the pension payment will be $1 billion. And you have to look at a pension over a 25-year period. He made a decision. He chose not to make the contribution. That's what happened. And, you know, Brian, when we signed the bill in 2011, we knew it was going to be very difficult. And if he grew the economy like they have here in New York State, well, it would have funded the pension system. Our economy hasn't grown. We've only recovered 40% of the jobs since 2008. Look, we've given $540 million in tax breaks to corporations, billions of dollars in incentives, and we have not recovered our jobs.
But that lack of economic growth can cut both ways, right? Here's a clip of the governor talking about the shortfall in expected revenues to the state from the economy.
What I haven't been able to do, because we had a revenue problem this year, much worse than anybody, ourselves, the legislature, or even the rating agencies forecasted, was I will not be able to pay down the sins of my predecessors.
So if Christie, if the state doesn't have the money coming in to fulfill the promise that the governor was hoping to keep on pension funding, how can he keep it?
Brian, because there was avenues to fund it, and the millionaire's tax was one of them. And I said, listen, you know, sunset it, bring it down. You know, you can do a lot of things with it as the economy improves. You can reduce the reliance on it. But the point is, I heard about his predecessors. He signed the benefit reform bill. No one else. He did. And when we did it, we knew what the obligations were, and he committed to funding them. So if you're short, you have to find revenue.
But I guess what the voters and the taxpayers of New Jersey have to decide is which is the better way. Because if the economy keeps going down in New Jersey while it's going up in New York and elsewhere, can you raise taxes year after year after year on, you know, the relatively few millionaires and the businesses and expect economic growth out of that as the means of closing the pension hole?
But Brian, we haven't raised taxes. We've cut taxes. We've cut business taxes.
But you proposed a tax increase.
We proposed a tax increase, and when the first millionaire's tax went in, the number of people filing doubled that were millionaires, increased, not decreased. New Jersey's a great state to live in, and all we're asking is everyone else to participate in the pain that we're dealing with. You know, again, no one likes proposing taxes. You got to understand that that's not a popular thing to do. But we made a commitment. We had an agreement to fund this pension system. So you just can't walk away from it and say it's tough and, oh, this was the people that came before me's fault, so I'm not going to deal with it. You don't get to do that in government. You know, there's no mulligans. You don't get to do do-overs. The responsibilities, the debt, whether you agree with what he did with the tunnel or not, he did it. If you agree with, you know, the turnpike's being widened, whether you agree or not, it's being done, it's being funded.
So the pension battle ended up in court, where a judge ruled basically that she had no choice but to give the governor and the legislature a one-year mulligan, in effect. We know you can't, you know, have to make the pension payments this year, but get your act together for 2015. So there is a mulligan. How will you balance the budget next year if you plan to once again oppose pension cuts?
Well, no. She recognized last year when we realized we were short $800 million, that we had the deficit. It was the middle of May. There was no money left. What we did is we presented a budget this year in, you know, June 30th for July 1st that fully funds all our obligations. We think that makes a very strong case to the courts that it's not that we can't pay. We're choosing not to pay. Because, you know, Brian, the government always has the ability to raise revenue. It's whether you want to choose to raise the revenue or not. And you know something, for me, when I chose to do benefit reform and put my butt on the line and got the crap kicked out of me, the only thing I did know is I was choosing to make sure that pension payment was made.
By the way, I've noticed recently that Almost nobody knows the word mulligan unless they're serious golfers or they're in politics. A mulligan meaning a do-over, which nobody actually ever gets, hardly almost ever in actual golf, all right, where you just – you're trying to hit off the tee and you just kind of touch it. And, oh, no, that doesn't count. Give yourself a mulligan. Start again. But politicians use it all the time these days to mean a do-over at something. And then people out there go, what? A mulligan? What is this Irish thing? What? I don't know what that means.
And, Brian, I never golfed in my life, just so you know.
Me neither. Deborah in East Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Thank you so much. Senate President Sweeney, thank you for being on and discussing these important issues on budget. You had tremendous support behind the decision to write a Democratic budget and present the millionaire's tax. Do you propose to revisit it in the legislature to pass it again so that we can see it as a ballot initiative in 2015?
That's a possibility. I have to talk to the Assembly about where we go forward on this. We would prefer not to do those things. We would prefer to do the responsible thing, and the governor recognized that he did make a commitment. But that is an option that we are going to look at.
Thank you for that question, Deborah. So you mean you're looking at possibly a statewide ballot initiative where voters would get to say yes or no on the idea of a millionaire's tax, as you described it?
There's a potential. Listen, I have to talk to the Assembly about it because it has to begin there because it's a revenue raiser, and all revenue raisers begin in the Assembly. But I look at it this way, Brian. Just like when we did minimum wage, when the governor objected to minimum wage, a responsible way of increasing it with an indexing, once he said no, we went to the people, and overwhelmingly they said yes. And I think that really, if you look at this issue, the people in this state would overwhelmingly say yes again. I would prefer not that direction. So we're going to see where we go with it, but it's a discussion that's going to be had.
Every state has its own rules about what can go on the ballot out to the people as opposed to being decided on by the legislature and the governor. When do you think it's right? You can't put every policy issue out for direct democracy, partly because people aren't as informed as the legislature who was supposed to make professional judgments. That's an argument for representative democracy. On the other hand, a lot of people would say, well, the way I laid it out disrespects average people too much. And, yeah, people should be doing direct decision-making and voting on a whole host of issues a lot more than they do now. But should people really be voting on tax? Like, you could argue that there are so few millionaires that – in a way, it's not fair to them as a minority that, you know, the 98% or whatever the number is who are not millionaires get to vote on whether those guys' taxes get hiked.
Well, you know, Brian, I'm not a big fan of issuing referendum. I really am not. But I also know that we made a commitment. We made a promise. We asked people to pay more for their benefits. We asked people to pay more for their pension. And the one thing that hasn't been kept, the promise that hasn't been kept, is the promise that Christie made with me to fund the pension system. And we have the ability to fund it, Brian. So I would prefer not to go that route ever. But
before you go, let me touch on a couple of things. One is Bridgegate. There's been no evidence to date showing Governor Christie knew about the plan in advance to close Fort Lee Lanes to the bridge or knew it was any kind of political payback. Is the air coming out of this as a Christie scandal per se, as opposed to a Christie administration scandal?
Well, right now, Brian, my majority leader is the co-chair, Loretta Weinberg, and she's been very stable and solid.
Co-chair of the committee investigating.
Co-chair of the committee, along with John Wisniewski. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to get to a point where they're going to be ready to give us a report on this and recommendations on legislation. So I'm trusting my majority leader to give me some guidance on this.
Sandy, we're just getting word this morning that the governor's so-called storm czar, Mark Furzen, has stepped down this morning. Do you know what that's about?
My understanding is that his wife is getting a different – he moved to Virginia for a job or something like that. But for me, Sandy's been an enormous frustration for me personally because I traveled the state. There is so much damage still, Brian, in this state, and everyone declares victory and things are better because the boardwalks are done. Tell the homeowner that was told by his government to rebuild and now is not eligible for any funding. I did a Bill of Rights, a Sandy Bill of Rights, that passed unanimously. No one voted against it. The governor vetoed it, took out the name of the bill, and on top of everything else. And when we went to do an override, the people that voted for it switched their votes. It's a shame for the people in this state right now.
Why would the people who voted for it have switched their votes? What kinds of pressures were placed on them and by whom, if this really was a meaningful Sandy Bill of Rights?
Well, you know, Brian, the funny thing is, it obviously the administration put the pressure on my colleagues in the Senate. We've never overridden them. I've actually, you know, tried an override on the Winona Littman House, which was a home for sexually abused kids when their funding was cut, and couldn't override there after people voted for it. This is a transparency bill. It's a fairness bill. It passed unanimously. People read the bill. They recognized the need for it. They heard the human cries. And then when the governor didn't want to admit that, look, they did a great job getting the funding from Washington. They did a very poor job of administering it.
The governor's frustrated, too. Yesterday, as you know, the governor announced 132 new grants for homeowners in 29 municipalities. These are administered by the Department of Environmental Protection, but they need approval from the federal government. And there are more than 1,000 applications still being reviewed. And both the homeowners, many homeowners who you represent and others, and the governor have expressed frustration with the pace of the program in Washington. Are you united on that?
Listen, what I'm united on is I had a bill that could tell you where you're on a list, why you're on a list, why you've been denied. And if you've been denied, if we don't give you the answers, we'll approve you. And he vetoed that bill. So if he's frustrated, if he's truly frustrated, then he would have signed my bill into law, which would have given people answers. You know, Brian, the frustration for the people is they don't know. They don't know where they are. They don't know when. They don't know why. And, you know, as a homeowner, the one thing you really do want to know is just tell me what I got to do.
If Chris Christie happens to run for president and happens to resign as governor in order to do that full time, do you as state Senate president become the acting governor?
No, we have a lieutenant governor. That was before we had a lieutenant governor. The lieutenant governor would serve until the next general election. And, you know, whoever wins would serve out the remainder of his term.
Have you spoken to the governor about whether he plans to run for president?
He hasn't told me what he plans to do, but it's pretty obvious what he's looking to do.
Do you think he would resign if he does run?
I didn't talk to him about that. I think he would. You know, a lot of pundits are saying he would need to raise the funds that he would need to do. At the end of the day, honestly, Clinton's going to win this race. So whoever they want to run can run. Hillary Clinton's going to win this race.
Can you take one more casino call before you go?
Sure.
Claudia in Rutherford, you're on WNYC. Hi. Claudia, are you there?
Hi, yes. Thank you for having me.
Sure, right to the point.
Yes, I wanted to know, going back to the talks about the building of casinos in northern Jersey, wouldn't that necessarily go against building revenue in Atlantic City, also considering traffic issues in northern Jersey?
Would you be against it? In Rutherford, you're close to the Meadowlands. So if that's where it would come, as some people speculate, would you be against it for the area?
Yes. I mean, I just believe that it would cause major traffic concerns as well as take away from somebody wanting to go down to Atlantic City with having the convenience of gambling in the Meadowlands.
Claudia, thank you.
Brian, listen, anyone that thinks it's a done deal that something would be done in the Meadowlands is overthinking right now for one reason. The market will determine where that goes. And if we do what we need to do in Atlantic City and bring it back as the destination site that it is, look, we made a big mistake. It was all gambling all the time for 30 years. We've just diversified. We're more non-gaming revenues are on the increase year in and year out. We have a beach. You know what beaches are and how valuable property is along the waterfront. Atlantic City has a brand new mayor. He's doing a great job. I really think we got a great shot at returning Atlantic City around.
Through a diverse economy is your point.
Yes.
Anything else you want to say on anything before you go? We've touched on a lot of topics. Give you a last open mic here.
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to be here, Brian, and take some of the calls from the viewers up here. You know, I'm from the other end of the state, but it's always good to hear from people up here, too.
And, of course, with our four New Jersey public radio stations now are getting out all over the state, as well as those listening in North Jersey on WNYC. So New Jersey State Senate President Steve Sweeney, thank you so much for making the trek in. Again, nice to see you.
Thank you, Brian.